Now, some of you wanted to do the win-win and be nice, altruistic, which I'm all for, but in the real world it doesn't always happen, and you divide it all down the middle. Is that fair? If you look at the splits, if you want to look at the statistics of this, A should get, it's 60, 40, 20. 60%, 40%, 20%. If you look at what each group should be given. That's if you wanted to draw, look at the numbers and calculate all the numbers, 60, 40, 20. And this is what we got. Yeah, percent. Now here's a 60, one, a 59, and a 1. Here's an interesting one. Here's number 1 got screwed. Here, number 2 got screwed. It looks like number 3 with this. Oh, you've been nice. Here's a few scraps for you. Pat them on the back. Here's a team that's taken the wall. Okay, let's just all split it down the middle and be friends. So number 1 got screwed. If you look at just the fair, equitable part about it. Here, number 1 got screwed. And here's some 60, 58. Here's a 50, 36, 35. So number 3 really came out ahead. 50, 50, 21. So what, they said, oh, we're being nice. We'll give you a little bit. 46. Here's some, who did this one? 46, 40.33. Who was that? Where did those numbers come from? Oh, okay. So you went after number 1. Oh, so number 1, okay, just keep quiet, we'll give you a little bit type thing. All right. Now, who is this one? This 46, 40, those are some interesting numbers. Who was that? Where did those numbers come from? Not really, but give me a 10-second answer. Okay. Did you notice what happened when you brought a third person into the mix? Does that dramatically complicate things? The personality shift? Sure. Okay. Well, but that's what's so interesting about this exercise. If they don't like number 1, 2 and 3 can come out. 3 can say, look, I'm getting screwed here. I'll give you this much. And number 2 can come out ahead, can't they? And number 1, and then that's what's so interesting about this when you bring all these numbers together. These are very important numbers. And you see the wide range of the results that we got. Well, if you're only going to give 3, 1 for being nice, because when 2 and 3, if 2 and 3 work together, what is it, 50? 59? Or look, I'll give you 55. I'll just take the 5. And 3's still coming out ahead. And A's screwed. You see what I'm saying? So at any time, two people could have got together and screwed the other party. If you all worked together, you got the most. If you really wanted to draw it down the mathematical lines, it's 60, 40, 20. 60%, 40%, 20%. Well, that would be, if you wanted to be, okay, if you crunch the numbers, it would be A deserves 60. And that's another thing. If you screw 3, chances are you're going to be doing business again and it's going to hurt you. But in the real world, we don't always think long term. It's short term. And you saw the emotions of them. When you get 3 parties, it just changes things dramatically. And that's why we do this. And if you're good, we might even do a 4-party one. Then it gets really interesting. Yeah. You were dead, they were going to take. And that's it. 1 and 2, that's what they usually do. Like, okay, 3, you've been nice. Here's your phone. Oh, you were number 1? Okay. So there's the altruism side. Then there's the other side. You've been sent to negotiate for a company, and your goal is to bring back, your job is to bring back as much as possible. Your company doesn't care about altruism all the time. They say, bring back $50 million or you're fired. Does that change the dynamics a little bit? So there's a lot of different things. That's why we do the 3-party. It's really interesting if we talk about that. We have some even splits right down the middle. Interesting numbers. Any questions on that? The 60, 40, 20, if you were to look at, because number 1 has the most leverage. So if you were to look at, crunch all the different numbers, A, if you were to go, would get 60% of the 121 million. B would get 40%, and C would get 20%. That's just how the numbers work out. If you just the point, it's 120 million. You might, yeah, I think I said percent. It's the 120. Yeah, with the one going to charity or whatever. Okay, well, we want to do a persuasion IQ result, but before we do, we have homework, two homework assignments tomorrow. I'm going to bring Steve up and so you can get your persuasion IQ answers. Yeah, we're going a little long today so you can get out of here early on Saturday. The two homework assignments are, first, before you come into the room, find the person that you did your group exercise with and practice your elevator speech, number one. And number two, we're going to hand out a piece of paper, and it's called Permission to Win. You fill that out tomorrow morning, you do that tonight, and you'll get the coveted Permission to Win band. Because the reason people haven't been successful, they haven't given their permission to win. Because most of you are playing not to lose instead of playing to win, aren't you? There's a big difference, isn't there? What is the difference between playing not to lose and playing to win? Attitude? Risk? Does Donald Trump play not to lose, or does he play to win? And it's a different mindset. You attract different people. And so I put some questions together, and I'm not saying they're the easiest questions in the world, but they will stretch you a little bit, if I can find them here. Your first question is, what is your definition of success? Because most people tend to rent their dreams from society. What's society tell you success is? What is it? Okay, what's that? Toys, house on the beach, money, money, money. Is that your definition? It could be, and that's okay, but what I'm saying is you need to decide what does success mean to you. For some, it's living in a middle-class neighborhood. Nobody knows you have $10 million in the bank, and you can give back to a lot of different charities. Could that be success to you? Is that okay? It could be living in Alaska, never thinking about money again, living off the land, knowing you have millions of dollars. That's okay. What I'm saying is, what does it mean to you? I don't care what society thinks, what do you think? Yeah. So are you renting your dreams from society or giving it back? All right. I'll just pick this up. It's probably easier here. The second question is, and the challenge is, why do you deserve to win? Who are you to become financially independent? Why you? What's that? Okay, I want you to think about that one. What are you going to do when you feel like quitting or giving up? Will that ever happen? Get it back on track? And the biggest one I want you to think about tonight is, what beliefs are holding you back? What your parents thought about money is in your brain, isn't it? You tell a first grader something, you tell a six-year-old something, it sticks. Do you think I'm Rockefeller? What else do we hear? Does money grow on trees? What else do we hear? What things parents put into our mind? Time to cut back? In fact, I was something early when I first got married, my wife asked, said, we need to cut back. Because millionaires think differently, don't they? They say, well, you want this or that. Billionaires say, I want both. Isn't that true? I told her, don't ever ask me to cut back. I'll just make more. I don't want to cut back. That was too much of a scarcity thing for me. So what beliefs? The challenge is when you look at beliefs, is right now in your brain you have conflicting beliefs. If an airplane was coming in for a landing and it had two different control towers telling it what to do, what would happen? If you had a torpedo and it had two different guidance systems, what would happen if you shot it? Would it hit the target? Right now in your brain you have conflicting beliefs. You want to be an entrepreneur, but you have to have job security. Do those conflict? You want to get out of debt, but you have to get into more debt to get out of debt. Does that conflict for some of you? You want to be spiritual, but then you can't be wealthy. Because if you're wealthy, that's evil. Now, your knee-jerk reaction is, I don't have that belief, but guess what? Some of you do. Could that be a conflicting belief for you? You want to spend more time with your family, but then you have to go to seminars to learn how to spend more time with your family to make the money. Does that conflict sometimes? What are some other conflicting beliefs that we have? Okay, learning how to make money by spending money. Scarcity mentality, there's not enough to go around, but you want to get yours. A lot of different things. So what are your conflicting beliefs? And you have to understand, this is so important. The beliefs, you picked up your beliefs growing up. A lot of those beliefs that are sabotaging you don't even know that they're there. One of my favorite stories comes from a gentleman named Peter Daniels. Have you ever heard Peter Daniels speak? I was at an airport bookstore, and there was this book. It had a really interesting title to it. I pulled it out, and I bought it, and I was reading another plane about Peter Daniels, who grew up in Australia in a very poor family. He was taught to be poor, and that's the only way. It's just what you had to do. And he was very sickly, very skinny, moved a lot. And in first grade, there was only a couple months left, but he moved into a new classroom with a teacher named Miss Phillips. Right, Miss Phillips. And she was mean. She was vindictive. She would slap him. She would pull him up to the front of the class and make fun of him. You take the worst teacher you've ever had, and you multiply it by 10, this is Miss Phillips. When you tell a first grader something, it sticks. They don't have the cognitive ability to think you're wrong. It sticks. So one day, if you're doing really bad on a test, she brought him in front of class. She said, "Class, this is Peter Daniels." He failed that test. You want to know what he got? And he sold the grade to the class. "This is Peter Daniels. I don't want you to be his friend because he's a failure in school, he's going to fail out of school, and he's going to fail out of life." Wow. Well, first of all, she should be shocked. Because a lot of teachers destroy young lives like that. On the flip side, there's some teachers that do some great things. But what happened to Peter Daniels? No, his first grader, they don't have the ability to do that. He failed out of school, and that belief stuck in his mind. He didn't even know it was still there. Tried a job, failed. Tried a business, failed. Tried a business, failure, 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 failure. He was well into, I guess, his 30s. Failure, and he realized it was this moment that caused all the failure in his life. It was that belief that he was a failure. He was sabotaging. So he got into real estate in Australia, and what did his family and friends say? What are you thinking? You can't do this. But he realized, he changed his beliefs, and he became a billionaire in real estate in Australia. And then he was done with real estate, and he wrote this book, and it was titled, "Miss Phillips, You Were Wrong." You were wrong. Don't you have? But the thing is, every single one of us have what? A Miss Phillips in our life, don't we? And you have a book to write, and it comes back to those beliefs. What are you doing to avoid failure? Many of you are waiting for all your ducks to be in a row. You have to know everything about real estate before you write your first offer. Has anybody been plagued by that? If you wait to know everything there is to know about real estate before you write your first offer, what's going to happen? Nothing. If you wait to know everything there is to know about your book before you write it, what's going to happen? Nothing. It's just an excuse. That's why we say at the Light and Wealth Institute, ready, what is it? Ready, fire, aim. Get out there and do it. What habits do you need to change? How do you know this is your year? And can I talk to you out of it? And then sign it. Bring it to the back tomorrow morning. We'll give you a permission to win band. And let me give you a couple more questions to ask yourself. Have you ever wondered what your true passion and purpose in life was? Have you ever wondered that? Why are you here? What's your purpose? What's your passion? Has everyone tapped into their passion? Do you know what your passion is? Few of you? Do you want to know what your passion is? Did you know that, as Mark Victor Hansen says, your DNA coded for greatness? Isn't that true? These are optional questions, but I want to give you four questions that will stretch you. And when you answer these questions, whether it be tonight or next week, you'll know your passion. You want to know them? Okay, first one. A genie appears and says you get one wish. You can change one thing in the world. What would it be? So you get one wish. And you can change one thing in the world. Poverty? Is it war? Is it disease? What are you going to change? So you can change one thing in the world. What could it be? There's probably about 50 things that need to be changed in the world. Which one are you going to pick? Okay. Strange Uncle Frank just left you $10 million. The first question is the genie. You change one thing in the world. Second question, Uncle Frank left you $10 million. You don't have to work anymore. What are you going to do? Now, this is assuming you've already had all your plastic surgery and all the traveling's done, and you still have $10 million. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with your time? You don't have to worry about money ever again. You're going to watch Nick at Night? What are you going to do? Hopefully it's not that. Okay. What would you do if you knew you could not fail? Would you run for president? Would you want to become a trainer? Do you want to write a book? If I was going to give you a gift that says, look, I guarantee you'll be successful, what would you do? What would you do? So the fourth question is your eulogy. You're 95 years old. I give this to college students and it freaks them out. I get parents calling me. I said, no, you don't get it. This is not sick. You're 95 years old. You've accomplished everything in your life. You've lived the perfect life. What's it going to say in your eulogy? That's the question. What's it going to say? How are you going to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered? So we had GD change one thing in the world, $10 million. We talked about your eulogy. And what would you do if you knew you could not fail? Permission to win. Stretching questions. It'll make a big difference. So bring that in. So tomorrow, bring in your permission to win. Fill this out. You'll get your band. Talk to your group leader. And then practice your elevator speech. Those are the main two things I want you to work on tonight. Right? Does that make sense? So we can start playing to win instead of playing not to lose. So what we're going to do right now is finish up here. We're going to go over your persuasion IQ results. Do you really want to know the truth? You want us to sugarcoat this? So we're going to bring up Steve Olson. He's a master at interpreting these scores in persuasion IQ. So let's bring up Steve Olson, and this will finish up the day.
Okay, everybody. You still have your persuasion IQ tests with you? You didn't throw them away? We're going to use those, and then we also put a sheet on your desk. You can see your persuasion IQ results. It's a white paper, looks like this guy. You will be needing that while we do this. So, a couple of things that we're going to do. We're going to calculate your score so you know exactly where you stand. You'll notice that you have some areas that may be weaker than others that you need to take into special focus as we go throughout this. Visit with your trainer about. Give you an explanation of the answers. Let you know where you rank. About 10,000 people have taken this IQ test nationwide and many worldwide as well. Depending on the question, it's assigned a certain point value. I'm not going to bore you with all the formulas and stuff that go into it, but if you get a certain question right, it may be worth more than another question. And the standard, or if you were to get 100% on this test, would mean you are one of the top persuaders that has taken the test. So there's about 12 of them that have become the standard, and that's what everything is measured against. That make sense? Okay? So I'm going to walk you through each question, and you will see how many points you get if you got the question right or wrong, and keep track of them, and in each area you'll tally up your total. It'll make sense as we go here. The first area is persuasion mastery. I'll try to stay out of everybody's way here. Persuasion mastery is the first area. You can see here what group is better at persuading. Kurt gave that answer away today. Little asterisk by introverts there. Obviously because they ask questions. So if you got that right, go ahead and give yourself 2 points. If you got it wrong, no points for you. And something useful to think about here. When you persuade, I want you to think of yourself as a doctor. Right? The last time you went to the doctor, what was your visit like? Well, you sat down and you said, what's the problem? What's wrong? How do you feel? And you started telling him about it. And he asked another question. You told him some more. And he asked another one. And another one. And another one. And he didn't stop doing that. He didn't give you a diagnosis and a prescription until he knew exactly what the problem was, did he? And that's what you need to focus on. That's the mentality to have as a persuader. Ask questions until you know what the problem is. There's a lot of things happening emotionally and on a self-esteem level there that are going to free up the persuasion process where people will resist you if you don't do that. I mean, think about it. If you had a headache and you went to the doctor and he said, what's wrong? Well, I have a headache. Could he just prescribe morphine and temporarily be done with it? He could. He could, but that wouldn't solve the problem, right? And it would actually probably create a more serious problem is what it would do. And that's what many persuaders do. They're giving everything they got at first. You don't want to do that. And see, the interesting thing about a doctor's visit is that when you go sit down with this doctor, well, you, the patient, do most of the talking, right? He just guides it through questions. In the persuasion process, you, the persuader, should talk about 20% of the time, your client about 80% of the time. That's the best balance that we've seen as we've administered this. And the second interesting thing, in that doctor's visit, nobody ever mentioned money. Didn't come up. He could fix your problem. You knew he could. You didn't mention it. You had full trust in the doctor. When you persuade correctly, money is not going to be an issue. Like Kurt said today in negotiation, people fight over price, 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 and money. If you've done it right, that's the least of everybody's worries. People are more than happy to pay whatever it takes to solve their problem. It's trust that's the problem. Okay? What percent of people will always go against social norm and violate social conformity? That's 1 to 5%. So if you got that right, give yourself 2 points. Got it wrong, 0 points. We'll talk about the law of social validation, testimonials, other people, okay? And when you can get that in place, it's going to persuade a lot. But like I said, the reason you need to know this, there's a small percentage of the population, they don't want to do what everybody else is doing. They want to do what works for everybody else. And so you can tell quickly if you throw out a testimonial or something, watch their reaction. You can tell if you've got a 5%er, and you're going to want to stay away from that. First color to register in the human brain is yellow. Give yourself 2 points if you got that right. It's those brighter colors. In fact, if you were to squint your eyes automatically filter out all the dark colors. And you see the tablecloths, you see the lights. Yellow is most resemblant to those colors. That's why they're painting all the fire trucks yellow. So for your ad copy, you know, things that you want to stand out, yellow is very effective. Those real estate signs you see, you know, call for free recorded message, always yellow. What percent of the decision-making process takes place in the subconscious mind? That's 95%. You got that one right, give yourself 2 points. Interesting thing there, subconscious mind, people will make up their mind typically in the first 5 minutes of meeting you and dealing with you. Subconscious mind ties you to all sorts of thousands and thousands of past experiences, tastes, smells, everything, okay? And it makes a decision and sends emotions to your brain, and then if it says, no, we don't like this person, you start looking for logical reasons to disqualify them, right? We found that? So you'll go to price. You'll go to something like that because it wouldn't make sense to just say, well, I just don't like you, right? You got to have a logical reason to avoid persuasion. So 95%. When do your prospects create mental shortcuts in their decision-making process? That is all of the above. It goes right back to subconscious mind. So if you mark all of the above, give yourself 2 points. So that's the persuasion mastery section. Go through, add up your point total, and you see on your sheet, everybody, that's the first one. Put what you got. Did you get 4? Did you get 10? Some of you are shaking your heads. Okay. And I'll tell you what the national averages are and such here in a few minutes on each individual category. Next category, closing skills. Kurt says they're like trying to get a kiss after a bad date, and sometimes they're necessary. If you've done everything else correctly, a closing skill can fit really nicely in the equation. So, when you show your prospect your products, what should you do to increase the amount of the sale? You want to show the most expensive item first. If you pick that, go ahead and give yourself 2 points. We'll talk about that either tomorrow or Saturday. I'm not sure what he has lined up. That's the law of contrast, how to correctly present numbers and such so that you can get the value as high as possible. Everyone with me still? Okay. Next one. You're trying to convince a future client they're being too conservative in their life insurance policy. What will be most persuasive? You want to say, what would happen if he died? That's your correct answer there. That's 2 points. If he's too conservative, it could very well be a time to use a little bit of ethical fear to get him to change his ways. He's too comfortable. That's law of scarcity, which we will talk about. What is the biggest reason people do things they don't want to do? Dissonance. That's 2 points if you got dissonance. We will talk about that. Okay, now things change a little bit. All those questions that we just did were either right or wrong. And now we're going into some scale questions. And so you may get 1 point depending on where you come at on the scale. So how are you in reading and interpreting your prospect's buying signals? You can see right there, does this have a laser on it? In the middle, okay. Right there, 1 through 3, if you mark yourself in there, 0 points. 4 and 5, you got yourself 1 point. 6 and above, you got 2 points. Make sense? Go ahead and do your math there. Rate your ability to close the deal. Also, 1 through 3 is 0 points. 4 and 5 is 1 point. 6 and up is 2 points. How are we doing so far? I still see a little bit of head shaking. We'll give you some ideas on improvement here. So, total up your closing score. That's your next line on your grading sheet. I'm hearing what score? Okay. We'll go to the next category here. We've tried to make the math as simple as possible on this. The guy at the office, my IT guy, was talking about algorithms and stuff, and I said, no, we're not going to do that. I don't even know what that is. Trust and influence, next category. Okay? What percent of clients trust you during the persuasion process? That's 20 to 40%. And that's weighted. If you got that right, give yourself 3 points. Okay. Next one. What number one characteristic is naturally found in most great persuaders? That is optimism. You got that right. Give yourself 3 points. I won't go into the explanation why that's weighted right now. Just know that it is. How would you rate your integrity level? Obviously, 3 and under, 0 points. 4 to 5, 1. 6 and up, 2. Something that we haven't been able to completely incorporate into the persuasion IQ test, if you gave yourself a 10, we've thought about making that worth 0 points. Because who is really a 10 all the time? We're humans. That's not really possible. So you may need to take that into consideration on the test. Okay? There's something out there called, Kurt hasn't talked about it, it's called the woebegone effect, if anybody's ever heard of it. We have a tendency to think higher of ourselves than we actually may be. I always like what Kurt says. That, you know, you take a room full of people, say, are you a good driver? Are you above average? Average or below average? I'm above average. Not everybody can be above average, okay? You'll have to be a mathematician to know that. It's not possible. How are you in establishing credibility? 3 and under, 0 points. 4 to 5, 1. 6 and up is 2 points. So go ahead and give yourself your points there. And yeah, actually, now sum up trust and influence. Get your total out of 10. Need to slow down? Everybody keeping up okay? Okay, good. Prospecting. Now here, this one gets a little bit interesting too. Do you find new customers every week? Go ahead and look at your answer there. And depending on your answer, your point total is off to the side. So if you said yes, you get 2 points. Congratulations. If you need to find more, you actually get 2 still. No is a 0. No, it scares me to death is a 0. Help me? Well, ask us about it in your interview then. We'll give you some ideas. How much time do you spend each week creating new customers? Everybody see right there? Find what your answer was and give yourself your points. Go ahead and shout at me if you need me to go back. Well, this is a cold, hard test, isn't it? All right. Rate your ability to write persuasive communications. Same scale as before. That has not yet changed. You got your prospecting skills. And asking for referrals. You go ahead and total up your prospecting score now. How's everybody doing? Once again, don't be shy. We'll get this thing graded. Prospecting is traditionally one of the lower categories. A lot of people do struggle there. Okay, I'm going next slide unless anyone says otherwise. Personal development. Go ahead and pick out your answer here. How many books have you read? And then have you taken a mentor or a top producer to lunch to pick their brains? Okay. More than 4 is 2 points. 3 is 2 points. 2 is 1 point. 1 is 0 and 0 is 0. And then on the bottom one, no is 0. Yes is 2. Why should I is 0. How many personal development seminars did you attend last year? You should all do okay there at least. Okay? So more than 4 is 2 points. 4 is 2. 3 is 2. Most of you will be in that area. Hours a week in personal development? Everybody see that? Okay, yeah. 6 and up is 2 points. Oh, above that? None is 0. 1 to 5 is 0. 5 to 10 is 1. 10 to 15 is 1. 15 to 20 is 2. And over 20 is 2. We probably need it. We're into psyche now. Okay? And go ahead and total up your personal development score. Okay? Psyche, do you believe you can double your income in 12 months? You said yes, you get 2. If you said no, you get 0. Shame on you. If you said I have hope, you get 1. There it is for you right there. Okay, which one of these skills is most important? If you said passion, you got 2 points. Anything other than that is a 0. Give you one more second there. Harvard study. If you said 85 and 15, you got 2 points. Actually, we did show that earlier on. So if you cheated and waited to finish your test, good job, way to be resourceful. Your average attitude on a daily basis, that's our same scale. Under 3 points is 0. 4 to 5 is 1. 6 and up is 2. Your ability to bounce back in the face of rejection, same thing there, same point scale. When you get done with that, go ahead and total up your psyche score. How are we feeling so far? Okay, it's normal to feel like that right now. We'll talk about what you can do to get that up. Pre-persuasion is our next section. Rate your listening skills. Perfect is 2, good is 1, average is 0, needs work is 0. Thought about making perfect 0 there too, so you have to take that into account. Are you fluffing your answers? A lot of this depends on how honest you are with yourself. And if you're wondering, oh, where am I? Take a look at your results. That will tell you. For example, a lot of people, one of these areas is connectivity. And many people have a tendency to inflate their score. They say, oh, I connect with everyone. People love me. Well, if you want to know how good you're connecting, how many deals are you closing? That's the real measure. Okay? Making lots of friends and not lots of sales. Your prospect self-esteem affects the way they'll be persuaded. It's easier to persuade someone with, if you answered average, congratulations, you get 2 points. If the self-esteem's too high, they don't have a need to change. They don't have a need to be persuaded, or at least in their mind, right? If it's too low, a lot of times people in low, they can get in this vicious cycle of nothing can ever improve, and they have a victim mentality. And that's tough to work with. Can you always find the needs, wants, and desires of your prospects? 1 to 3 is 0, 4 to 5 is 1, and 6 and up is 2. They're less responsive to certain persuasive tactics. Doesn't mean you can't persuade them, right? But as far as your role in the decision, it will be not quite as amplified. So on average, if they have an average self-esteem, they're going to value a little more of what you say, because we'll get into this tomorrow, but your posture and your position as a persuader is very important. And if they're constantly competing to be above you and such, that can be a little bit detrimental. Doesn't mean it makes it impossible by any means, but just average on is the easiest. Does that make sense? Rate your time management skills. 1 to 3 is 0 points, same scale. In fact, I don't even think that changes. 4 to 5 is 1, 6 and over is 2. And how's your ability to use a pre-persuasion checklist before you meet with your prospects? By the way, some of these say, what's this? You can circle that. What's this is akin to 0 points. Some of you are nodding. I'm a what's this. Okay, so you can total up your pre-persuasion score now. We're moving on down the list. Here's connectivity. Very closely related to closing. Interesting statistic, actually, out of the 10,000 people we've given this test to. If somebody in the area of personal development is above about a 70%, and then they're also above a 70% in their prospecting, the closing is always going to be above a 50. That was a statistic that we found. A very tight relationship between those, and also between connectivity and closing, like I said. How well are you connecting? Well, how well are you closing? I like closing because it does not lie. You either did or you didn't, right? So connectivity. When you connect and find similarities with your customer or prospect, which one is the most important? If you said attitude, give yourself 2 points. Attitude kind of overarches all of those other possibilities. Rate your ability to mirror and match your prospect. Tomorrow we'll talk a little bit about negotiation personalities. That'll help you with this significantly. Under 3, 0, 4 to 5, 1, 6 and over 2. Rate your ability to develop rapport. Same scale. Go on here. Everybody keeping up okay? Any questions? Rate your ability to use ingratiation with your prospect. We'll talk about what that is. We've probably got a lot of what's this on this one. Same scale. How is your ability to raise the self-esteem of your prospects? Relating to that question. So, total up your connectivity score. Presentation skills. We have 5 senses. When you create involvement with your prospects, you need to use as many senses as possible. What are the top 3 senses? Visual, hearing, and smell. Answer that, give yourself 2 points. Prospects listen at the rate of blank words per minute, and we think at a rate of blank words per minute. We did discuss that today. I don't know if you caught it. 120 to 150 and 400 to 800. That's a 2-pointer. Rate your ability to inoculate your prospects. Same scale. Those of you that were in my group for the trust exercise, that's what I was referring to when you overcome objections in your elevator speech before. Anticipate those knee-jerk reactions. That's what inoculation deals with, and we'll be talking about it. Okay, everybody got this? Now you're rating yourself here on presentation skills, same scale. Do you use vocal fillers on the phone or in your presentations? Sometimes people think, oh yes, I do, and put a 10. That's not good. If you use them a lot, that would be a 1. So what's your overall presentation score? Total that up. Motivation. You make goals daily, give yourself 2 points. Weekly, 1 point, and the rest of them are zeros. What is the best term or best long-term motivation? That's inspiration. If you got that right, give yourself two. The three biggest obstacles to change are comfort zone, fear, and motivation. If you got that right, give yourself two. The biggest challenge in using rewards to persuade and motivate is diminishing intent. In fact, did I tell you? Oh yeah, we're in motivation now. So, diminishing intent, that's a two-pointer. And your ability to motivate and energize yourself, same scale. So what's your motivation score? Tally that up. And I believe that takes care of the individual categories. Everybody got this one okay? We'll change those colors for future students. Thanks for taking one for the team there. Got this one okay? Now, add everything up for your total, the grand total, the bottom line. It is out of 100. Now, I want to see, when you're done, how many are still working on that? A couple? John? Okay. Everybody, I'm going to see, and you don't, so nobody else sees, but I do want to see. Close your eyes for a second. If you're pleasantly surprised by your score, raise your hand. Okay? If you feel a little embarrassed or a little disheartened by your score, raise your hand. If you're about where you thought you were going to be, raise your hand. Okay. You can open your eyes. Let's give you some thoughts. You see how this is, it's in red, yellow, and green. These are the different areas. And so you look at your sheet, like for example, persuasion mastery, let's say you were a 5. If your number is yellow, you are average. If your number is green, you are above average. And if it's red, you are below average. Closing. Yep, 5 to 7 is yellow, and I'll go through and tell you. 1 to 4 is below average. 5 to 7 is average. 8 to 10 is above average. On closing, 1 to 3 is average, below average. 4 through 8 is average. 9 to 10 is above average. That's a very important area. Trust and influence. 1 to 6 is below average. 7 and 8 is average. 9 and 10 is above. Prospecting, 1 to 3, below. 4 through 7 is average. 8 through 10 is above. Personal development, 1 through 6 is below. Especially in a group like this, you know, a lot of you are into that a lot. 7 to 8 is average. 9 to 10 is above. Psyche. 1 through 4 is below. 5 through 7 is average. 8 through 10 is above. Pre-persuasion. 1 to 2 is below. 3 to 6 is average. 7 to 10 is above. Connectivity. 1 through 5. Below, 6 and 7, and yeah, just 6 and 7. Average, 8 through 10 is above. Yeah, actually, excuse me there, 6 through 8 is average, 9 and 10 is above. The projector does throw kind of a bad shot there. Presentation skills, 1 through 3 below, 4 through 7 average, 8 to 10 above. Motivation, 1 through 4 is below. 5 through 8 is average. 9 and 10 is above. So keep in mind as we talk about all this, there's over 120 different things that you can do to persuade and influence somebody. On average, every persuader is using about 2 or 3. So some of you are looking at your test going, holy, what do I do? That's why. I mean, we're not taught to be good persuaders in school. We're not taught everything that's out there. So that's why it's good that you're here. You know, if I could give you one piece of advice from this workshop, take a couple of things, two or three things that you relate most to, that really hit home, and take those and apply one of them every month for the next 3 months. Okay, make them habitual. Then you've just doubled your skill set above most persuaders. You've covered a lot of ground that way. Here's what your final score means overall. So if you're from 0 to 4, that's 0 to 40%. You're generally a below average persuader or negotiator. If your income depends on leading others, negotiating, copywriting, recruiting, any of that stuff, you should seek immediate help. There's a lot of ways to do this. You can ask your consultant. There's various things they can recommend to you, drills that you can do for yourself to get better. What I'm saying is, if you're in that area, make improvements. Otherwise, you're not going to be in your field for very long. That's the nicest way I can say it. 41 to 70, or just 4 to 7. That's not exact, I realize, because we made the scoring simple. You can discuss that with your trainer. You're an average persuader. So while you're not in any immediate danger of going out of business, your results are going to be highly impacted by economic downturns. Economic downturns chew up average persuaders and spit them out. Okay? So upgrading your persuasion skills is going to help you rise above the rest in those situations. I was doing a training in Boise, Idaho. Anybody done any investing in Boise? It's been a good market, hasn't it, in general? And these got, a few years ago, really good, and it's tapered off. And we were working with a mortgage office on doing a seminar, actually getting Kurt up there, and you know they saw just realtors quitting. Because when a market goes good, the realtors all jump in. Everyone gets their license. They were doing that in San Diego 10 years ago. How many of them are still doing it now, right? San Diego's in a nosedive. So if you want to avoid that kind of stuff, getting outsourced, you got to upgrade your skills. And if you're at 7 to 10, you are above average, so congratulations. More than likely, you're always doing this. You're always upgrading. So that allows you to constantly achieve those above average results. The point is, keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. Get more information. Learn more so that you don't fall into the average category. Okay? So the rest of the test, there were some open-ended questions. You know, what's your greatest strength? What's your greatest weakness? You can actually take it again if you like at persuasioniq.com. It gives you exact percentages. So instead of 5, it'll give you 52.4, whatever. You can know a little bit more exact where you rank. So if you have questions about a particular area, why am I weak at closing? Why did I get a 2 there? Or why am I strong here and weak there? Keep those in mind for when you visit with your trainer. We're going to have some sign-up sheets. Do we have the sign-up sheets? Okay. You can sign up outside with Natasha for your interview about your IQ results. And they'll be able to make all the cold, hard numbers or the warm, fuzzy numbers make sense. Why are they the way they are? Okay? Get a friend, a mentor, a coach, or somebody to listen to you and persuade and critique you. You don't sound like you think you do. Who's ever heard themselves on a tape recorder and said, I sound like that? Right? That's the same thing with persuasion. You listen to yourself doing it, and you're thinking, I can't believe anybody buys from me. Right? Have somebody critique you. Measure your results. Take the IQ again. You know, take it 4 months, 6 months from now. It's there on the web. It's always going to be there. Track where you've improved. You can ask your trainer about becoming a guinea pig if you want to. They have something where we're taking a select group of students, having them take the IQ now, take it again in 6 months, and then again in a year, and at that year mark, we're taking the top 50% of the class, the top 50% of persuaders, on a cruise, which is on us, and we'll be doing a big debriefing because Kurt's getting ready to release his book, Persuasion IQ, and we want to have a couple of days with those top persuaders to pick their brains and get everything down that worked really well for them. Okay? Well, those are your results. Any questions? Go ahead. That's a good question. And that's weighted, and that's taken into consideration and everything. You look at a persuader, some persuaders have raw skills, they're just talented. Other people know a lot, but they don't apply much. So you very well could be answering that question incorrectly, but still be applying a lot of things correctly. Now, your overall knowledge of persuasion and how it changes is going to have a bearing on your ability to persuade. So it's weighted, and if you answered it incorrectly, it's not the end of the world. A lot of those right-wrong questions aren't. Take your whole score into consideration, because there will a theme will emerge. There may be one or two glitches here and there. You know, that happens. Human error. But the overall, consistently with the 10,000 we've done, the bottom line does get pretty accurate. Any other questions? Well, all right. Let's call it a day then, and we'll see you all here at 9 a.m. tomorrow. We'll start uncovering a lot of things that I just told you about. Bring your scores and make sure you sign up for a time with one of the trainers, and we'll keep it up. All right, see you tomorrow. You're welcome.